Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
We start on the Wintrust Business Lunch today with John Beaver, the financial advisor at Phase 3 Advisory Services. You can always visit Phase3advisory.com. That's the number 3 in the website. Hey, John, welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's good to be with you on this nice, warm spring day.
Yeah, it's just about as good as it gets. And despite the warmth, inflation is cooling. That's a good thing, right?
It is a good thing, but it is still on the hot side. And it's like the news of the last several months, inflation, recession, rates, what's going to happen with the stock market, and as always, there's the uncertainty. This is the period of time where as inflation is heating up and the Fed is fighting it, we don't know which way it's going to go. But it is cooling right now as of the current readings. CPI year over year is now down to about 5%. The Michigan expectations of inflation, that actually came in a little hot today at 4.6% versus 3.7% for the next year. Those are expectations for the next year. But import prices, they actually came in down at 5% for the year now, for 1 year, year over year. So that's actually kind of a good thing. So we've got a fight going on in inflation. The good thing is that wages are catching up, so that's good. The consumer is still in pretty good shape, but starting to get a little tight. And at the same time, the banks now are starting to lend less. So are we going to have a recession or not? That's the question. Well, mortgage rates are moving down a little bit. That's good. Earnings are likely to decline this year. That's not good. But this economy is very resilient. You know, just as right now we're in this spring in our climate, in the economy, in the debt cycle, which lasts about 60 years, we're actually in our economic spring. And in economic spring, the economy tends to be pretty resilient. So this puts the Fed in a predicament because they got some things that indicate, well, it's slowing down. Some things indicate not slowing down enough. So the question for the next couple of weeks is, will the Fed raise rates in May?
How much are you thinking about will banks themselves start to curtail lending because of a variety of factors, including what happened in California, but also with interest rates where they are? But I mean, is that going to be impactful? Are you watching that?
Yes, it will be impactful. Not a lot, but some impactful. So the first thing is when rates rise, consumers borrow less. We've seen that in the mortgage market. So it's a good thing if we can get these mortgage rates down even just a little bit. A sidebar on that. Every 0.5% that the mortgage rates come down 0.5% on $100,000 of mortgage, that drops the payment by about $33. Kind of a rough figure, but that's a good one to use. So that can be meaningful, especially for first-time home buyers that might be borrowing $300,000. They might be able to trim $100 a month off that mortgage rate. So as rates go up, that does curtail some consumer borrowing. The banks themselves are tightening their lending standards, no doubt, as a result of this, for two things, as a result of what happened with Silicon Valley Bank, but also all these banks are sitting with losses in their treasury bond portfolios, the longer-dated bonds. So the banks have to be more cautious at this point.
We're talking to John Beaver from Phase 3 Advisory Services about the economy and what it means to you and me. You know, it's kind of a mixed bag out there you were describing, John. What should people be doing if they're regularly investing in their savings?
Well, the first thing we do with our clients is to always identify the time frame for the money. Is this money that's shorter term, like maybe 3, 4, 5 years, or is this longer term money, maybe medium term for college or long term for retirement? So once you identify that, then it's a little easier to build the portfolio. So right now we've got this thing going on with rates. Are rates going up or are rates going down? So we've got short-term rates higher than longer-term rates. That indicates a recession is coming. Now, it's kind of interesting. As the short-term rates go higher and higher, the longer-term rates may come down even a little bit more out of that concern that we're going to have a recession and the economy is going to slow. So what does that do for the bond side of the portfolio? Well, if you're a short-term investor, you're going to need the money within the next year. Obviously, you keep that money short-term. And there are some pretty good opportunities that have actually developed now that interest rates are normalizing. There are actually some mutual and exchange-traded funds now that are giving you pretty good access to short-term T-bills that would be 1 year or less, treasury inflation-protected securities, and treasury floaters, so you can still keep your money safe. And if you're looking for something that has a fixed duration to it, you want to have a bond, a short-term bond, or a CD, those rates have also come up. There's still rates out there around 5%. So that would help with short-term. Longer-term on bond money, the concern is how high are rates going to go over the next 10 years. So you need to talk that over with your advisor. On the stock side, for anybody that's a short-term trader or they need the money in the next, let's say, 12 to 18 months, I really think that money has an opportunity to come off the table right now. This market has been range-bound, stuck around 4,000 on the S&P 500, upside maybe 4,200. We didn't quite get there this time, downside maybe 3,800. And with the recession still out there and the Fed indicating, yeah, there's a chance there is going to be one, I'd just be cautious on shorter-term money in the market now. However, having said that, if we do get into a recession, then the market tends to sell off going into the recession and bottoms as a recession is starting. So that gives a great buying opportunity. So today might not be the best buying opportunity. That may come in the next 12 to 18 months. Long-term money should still be going in the market a month at a time. As I mentioned before, we're in the springtime of our economy, and the market tends to push higher over time. Not necessarily year over year. You'll get these setbacks like we had last year and maybe even this year. But over time, it does advance.
But you are describing buying it on the way down now. You just said keep putting your money in the market if your horizon is long term. Don't wait for the bottom. Put it in right now.
Don't wait for the bottom. No one can pick the bottom. If they get it, it's an accident or it's lucky. Even in the industry, you know, none of us can actually pick the bottom. So if someone is an active trader, that's a different situation. But for most people, you just keep putting that money in at this juncture. You'll buy on the way down, watch the market come back up again, and all those purchases will make money over time.
If your horizon is more than 2 years.
Well, and I say for dollar cost averaging, which is what we're just describing, I like to see a time frame well in excess of 5 years.
Yeah. Well, but you did. But what was it you just mentioned? 18 months. That was you think that's the bottom? I know we're not picking the bottom here, but didn't you just say
that? But what I would expect to see, softness in the market, bottom sometime in the next 12 to 18 months, and then the market moves up from there. So if we're talking a year to a year and a half, maybe slushy and on the downside, and then another year and a half to the upside, we could be looking still at 3 to 4 years before we get back to the previous high that we hit at 4,800 on the S&P. That would have been the beginning of last year.
What if somebody's doing some sort of NFT or some sort of more targeted investing in equities? Are there areas that you think are pretty good right now or promising?
Well, yeah, one of the first things is right now I would not exit out of natural resources. We are in the inflationary part of the cycle that could last for, could be a decade or two. So I wouldn't bail out of that. Where the real good opportunities are right now, it's really hard to find where the cheapness is. Now, having said that, you know, the big banks, they've rallied today on earnings. Those banks are down 20 to 30% from their highs. So if someone's looking for consistent income, that might be a way to go. But it's not going to give a, you know, substantial capital gain like we've seen in tech in the past couple of decades. The other opportunity, which is not popular to talk about, is actually international. International stocks are much more cheaply priced compared to U.S., and there tends to be this 10-year pendulum swing back and forth where international does better than U.S. So it's very possible that over the next 10 years, those international investments may do better than the U.S.
Can you forecast for us a little bit what the Fed's actions will be doing to mortgage interest rates?
So my best guess is that the Fed at the next meeting in May will raise rates a quarter point. You know, just because we get a little bit of a cooling in inflation, they're not going to fall into the trap of, okay, we're done. They're going to be relentless. They're going to be relentless about this. They told us that. When the Fed raises rates, they're slowing the economy. If they slow the economy, mortgage rates come down because mortgage rates ping off of the 10-year Treasury bond, not short-term rates. So if the Fed raises, that should bring these rates down. Now, we're hopeful that we're going to see the mortgage rates back down in the 5% range. Now, that doesn't mean low fives. You know, we could be at 5.75% sometime in the next 12 months.
Yeah, that's not bad.
No, and for those first-time home buyers, buyers sitting on the sidelines just waiting to get in, they should be prepared for this. They should be ready. They should be looking at the properties that they would be interested in and be ready to strike.
How close would the mortgage rates go down relative to the Fed raising it a quarter point? Does it happen right away, or is it gradual?
You know, it's all based on what the bond market does, because, again, these mortgage rates ping off the 10-year treasury. So if you want to watch this, just watch the 10-year treasury rate, and that'll give you like a 1 to 3 day notice on what the mortgage rates are going to do. It's pretty quick on how that moves. The question is, how fast will those 10-year treasury rates change based on what the Fed does?
One last thing, by the way.
Two increases coming up.
I cut you off. Two increases coming up. You are talking about the Fed
there? I think they're going to do two more increases, yes.
At 25 each.
Yeah, right now it's about over an 80% probability that in May they're going to raise, and that's pretty much in the bag right now, so I think that's almost a given. Probably one more after that, just because the Fed is going to want to show that, you know, they're kind of in control on this thing. They're supposed to be responsive, but they don't want to get caught in the 70s trap where the Federal Reserve let go too soon on raising rates.
Okay. Any last words of wisdom before I let you go, John?
Yeah, don't let the volatility scare you. It creates opportunity.
That's what we're hearing from John Beaver from Phase 3 Advisory Services. Okay, John, we'll talk again in a week or so. Thanks for your thoughts today.
Looking forward to it.
What's going on at Walmart? People trying to figure out why stores would close. Some of you are saying that, among other things, theft or whatever. There's also a problem of just getting people to work at some of these stores. I'm going to talk to Corey Katenga right now, who is a senior economist at LinkedIn. Not about that per se, but about maybe the whole job world in general. Hey, Corey, you're on WGN Radio. How are you today?
I'm doing great, John. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I didn't know that LinkedIn had a senior economist. What's your angle? What do you do then for them?
So we actually have a few economists. We have a chief as well, so we are a tribe. As an economist, what I do is I look at the labor market in particular, try to understand based on our data and what's going on in other data sets, what's happening in the world of work, what's happening right now, and what's going to happen next.
What are some of the big picture things you've noticed?
Yeah, so in the last year, we have seen a big slowdown in hiring. So at LinkedIn, when we see people changing their profile status, we can actually track how hiring is going in the U.S. and even in places like Chicago. So overall, we've seen that hiring is down by about 28% compared to this time last year. You know, it's particularly down in the sectors that you're hearing a lot about, like tech, information, media, which are down about by half compared to how much they were hiring last year. And we see that the same thing in Chicago. So we're seeing that hiring has come down by quite a bit, even though we still see these payroll numbers that come out every month and they look very strong and there's resilience in the labor market. There's definitely signs that the labor market has been slowing down.
But employment is still record high, right? Unemployment is still around 3%, isn't it?
Right. Unemployment is still around 3.5%. Part of that is that we are an aging population, right? So there are a lot of folks who stepped out of the labor force during the pandemic who have not come back. So at this point, we've kind of reached a point where we've gotten everyone back in the labor force in terms of total number who wants to be in the labor force. But we're still a lot of people short. So that's kind of keeping unemployment low as well. And then also, there were just a ton of jobs out there, right, emerging from the pandemic. It was one of the fastest recoveries we've ever had. You know, we had a month where about, particularly in Chicago, about 10 years of job growth were wiped away in 1 month. And we got that all back within a couple of years. So there were a lot of jobs out there, right? And that gave a lot of opportunities to folks, kept unemployment down. And so we had really good conditions for workers, and they were able to really search hard and look for work.
Yeah, but I'm still wondering then, what does that hiring down 28% mean? Maybe that's not such a bad thing. It just means jobs have been getting filled. Or is this a sign that the economy is starting to shift a little bit?
Right. So there's the mechanical effect you talked about, right? Job openings go up in December, you know, hiring goes up in January. But then there's also just the general environment that we're in. It is the case that the economy is slowing down, right? There's a lot of uncertainty about where we're going, but it's pretty clear that things are slowing down. And when things slow down, a lot of companies start to reassess their hiring needs. They may think, well, maybe I don't need to open these positions. maybe I want to wait and see what's going to happen. So we have seen sort of the level of job openings tapering off over time and just sort of this gradual descent in the labor market. So, you know, nothing alarmist there. It's kind of what you would expect. It's what you would expect when interest rates go up and it's harder to borrow. It's harder to create businesses. It's harder to finance your debt. So you don't want to hire as much. So that's what we're seeing right now in the labor market.
Can you talk a little bit? I did allude to this just a moment ago. We're talking to Corey Katango, who is a senior economist at LinkedIn. But places like Walmart, I'm hearing anecdotally, but I believe this is true in a lot of stores, are having trouble still hiring people. Is that true? And what's the future for that?
Yeah, so there are definitely some industries where they are still having labor shortages, and they're also in particular geographical areas. So, for example, leisure and hospitality, when we see these strong job numbers each month coming out, these days they are really being driven by hiring in leisure and hospitality. They lost 1 million workers over the pandemic, and they still have not gotten them all back. So there's just a lot of scope there for them to fill positions. Right. So those kinds of industries are really driving hiring. It's a similar story in healthcare. A lot of workers stepped out of healthcare during the pandemic. Yeah. We have an aging population, so our need for healthcare services isn't going down, and it isn't going down anytime soon. So we still need a lot of workers there. We also had a huge drop off in immigration. Right. And immigration also supports these sectors like leisure and hospitality and healthcare. And with that huge drop-off, we came up a lot of people short.
Do you have a number on retail? What direction is that arrow going?
Right. So the retail sector has been shrinking for a while. It actually is one of the sectors that we see in our data that did have a decline in the last month. So things are not going particularly well in retail. And there are a lot of dynamics, right, in that entire industry with the emergence of online retail, which is kind of more considered in the transportation and logistics industry. So they really have a lot of competition. And this is kind of a long run trend that we've just sort of seen the retail sector shrinking over time.
So you have this sort of tale of two cities, don't you? Tech, information, media, they're laying people off. There was a lot of hires that they did maybe in the last round that they now don't think they can support. And yet we still need people to work in hospitals and in restaurants and in stores and at Disney World. I mean, there's still a need for employees in those areas, even though maybe, with the exception of healthcare, say, those aren't the best paying areas. Those aren't maybe the areas with the best future, but we want and need those people, and they aren't rushing back to those positions, if I'm reading you right.
Right. So, you know, a lot of folks were laid off during the pandemic. And once they were laid off, they decided, well, you know what, there are actually other opportunities out there. So we saw a lot of movement of people into administration and support services, right, for professional services. There were a lot of folks who maybe you worked in a restaurant before, but you decided to work in an office now and work as a receptionist. That is one of those sectors that we've seen on LinkedIn grow very rapidly in the last 2 years.
So the pendulum did swing towards the employees. Is it swinging back to the employers now?
Right. So in some respects, it is. So we see right now on LinkedIn that about 1 in 9 job posts are for remote work, right? At the height of the remote opportunity space, there was about 1 in 5. So about 20% of jobs were remote, and it's come down a bit. But we see that workers are applying to these remote jobs. 50% of the applications are to remote jobs on LinkedIn. So we see that workers, they want remote work. But employers are comfortable, at least at this point, of pulling back and not offering that as much. Part of it is the composition of jobs, right? Leisure and hospitality jobs, on-site jobs.
Right.
Those are the ones that we're deficient in, and you can't necessarily do them all remote. So that's part of it. And, you know, there are some aspects of where employers are thinking about, how can I be more flexible? Can I offer flexible hours? Offer sort of a flexible schedule to work around the fact that you do need to be on site to work. So there's definitely kind of tension there that we're seeing, but people do want to work remote, but their bargaining power to work remote has definitely diminished in the last year.
Corey Katenga is a senior economist at LinkedIn. That's real interesting stuff, Corey. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The amount of venture capital funding is down again to its lowest level in more than 2 years. Cranes reports funding dropped 59% in the first quarter for Chicago startups, the lowest level since 2020. The data comes from PitchBook. Startup funding fell to $590 million from the fourth quarter. The number of deals in Chicago fell 14%. Chicago venture funding dropped 64% when compared to the first part of 2022. Nationally, the decline was 55%. Uncertainty about the economy and lower tech sector valuations are partly to blame. Workers at a Portillo's food preparation facility in Addison are forming a union. 50 food service workers at the suburban plant voted Thursday to unionize in an election held by the National Labor Relations Board. The Addison facility is believed to be the first unionized Portillo's location. Both parties have 1 week to file objections to the election. After that, Portillo's must begin bargaining with the union. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's the business of food with Steve Alexander.
Thank you, and to the phone we go. Mr. Fizz, Fridays are back.
Hello, Steve. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Jim. Thank you. Before we get going, let me tell you that we're sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. And, Jim, I am thrilled to welcome you back for, I believe this is your 62nd year offering gardening advice on WGN.
Yeah, it seems like that's about right.
Well, happy spring to you, and where do you want to begin?
Well, happy spring to you, too. You know, for as many years as we've been doing this, it's always fun to start the season. But anyway, right now, there are a lot of things we can do outdoors besides planting. One thing we need to do right now is get the lawn in shape. Winter was kind of hard on the lawns because there was not much snow, so a lot of the grass has popped up. If you have a roller, you need to go out and lightly roll that to get all this grass firm back down. Then after you've rolled it, you need to rake up all the things that have accumulated over the winter time, things like sticks and the papers that have grown around, maybe some leaves that fell late. Then the next thing you really need to do is to mow the grass short just once. I like to mow it at 1.5 inches tall. Now that removes old brown grass, if there's any, or whatever there is. Then you raise the mower right back up to its normal height, which I recommend is 2.5 inches. And after you've done that, fertilize with a complete fertilizer, generally with slow-release nitrogen, and that's usually what you can buy at the hardware store. Another thing that we need to do at this time of year is put down crabgrass preventer. Crabgrass starts growing very early in the season, as soon as the soils warm up a little bit. So if you're going to prevent this nasty weed from growing in your lawn, you need to put crabgrass preventer down now. Now, keep in mind, if you use a crabgrass preventer, you cannot reseed your permanent grasses until that is gone, which means not until next fall. Next thing you need to do is rake out your shrub borders, trim out any broken branches, pull out any sticks, and so forth. You don't want to cut off any flower buds if you can help that, because those are already on there. In fact, if you look closely, you may see the buds on the forsythia and the viburnum and the lilacs beginning to develop. So certainly don't cut those off.
Yes, sir. Mr. Fizz, Jim Fizzell. From the farm to your belly, today is National Pecan Day and National Gardening Day. That's the business of Fizz on 720 WGN.
Patricia Mota joins us now, the CEO of the Hispanic Alliance for Career Enhancement. HACE, you might call it. Patricia, you're on WGN. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I understand you have a couple of initiatives about leadership. Talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, absolutely. The organization's national in scope. We're headquartered here in Chicago, and our mission since 1982, while we have evolved on how we deliver on that mission, the mission's been to positively impact workplaces by cultivating the pipeline of Latino talent, providing our community the insight, access, and development to be successful in their careers. And we carry out that mission through one, talent acquisition program services, where we actively connect employers to anywhere from interns to senior level talents. We carry out the mission through two, which is our pipeline and leadership development programs that include individual coaching, leadership assessments, culturally relevant content, and most importantly, a strong multi-generational support network where we have executives, senior leaders coming back as subject matter experts, guest speakers, trainers, and those in their careers doing the same for our students. And finally, we carry out our mission through thought leadership branding. This is where we bring our 200-plus corporate partners together, our employers, to share best practices, to shine a light on those that are helping us with our mission through, such as with our diversity officer roundtables, our executive leadership tours, our national leadership summit, which is happening next week, and various events. And but to your point, our leadership development has become our bread and butter, where we're, through cohort model trainings, helping individuals obtain promotions, increase their pay, and most importantly, become visible in their workplaces and communities.
So is this for maybe the Hispanic population that works in the corporate world or otherwise, or is it for entrepreneurs, people that want to get their own business up and running?
I love that. We just recently, 2020, we started an entrepreneurs cohort. So we also work with entrepreneurs. We not only have professionals in corporate, but also in higher education and government that are a part of our programs. And so it's applicable to anyone. And we and then we say we Latino serving, but we're not Latino exclusive. I think we welcome everyone to be part of our programs, services, and events that could benefit from them.
Give me a success story. Tell me about somebody or some business you've helped.
Absolutely. And so we've worked on this year, we're celebrating our 15 years of our women's leadership program, Mujeres de ACE. And with this program, time after time, we have women that once they complete, within less than 12 months of completing the program, 80% are reporting an increase of pay and promotion, and 100% that recommend the program. Our employers that sponsor their employees or Latinas to participate in this program send more and more women every year because not only because of the metrics and the impact that I just mentioned, but because of the visible engagement that they see within the workplace, that they're getting promoted, that they're involved with their business resource groups, that they're involved with the business community. And so that's one key highlight that we're celebrating next week during the brunch event on April 21st.
Is the issue that this population is every bit as qualified in doing the work, but they just don't know how to ask for it, how to capture it? Or is it that they don't have the skill set and they need to be trained more on how to be more eligible or profitable employees?
Well, I think everybody needs to be trained more. I think we just heard from one of your prior segments, right, that there's a need for more tech talent. There's a need for in healthcare, but and whatnot. So that's part of the issue, I think, in general, as it comes to the workforce. Specific to Hispanic, Latinos, community, there are some cultural nuances for a good majority being first generation, going into a professional workforce, or even obtaining a college degree, for example. Through ACE, we're able to connect them to role models and mentors and support that's culturally relevant to them, meaning we understand that perhaps there may be some traditional cultural values such as humility, modesty, that may not necessarily help us in the workplace. And I'm generalizing as it pertains to you need to toot your own horn. You need to promote yourself. You need to advocate for your work. You need to make sure you're building your strategic networks. And so those are some of the key things that we really hone in on during our trainings, our program, and events. And at the end of the day, it's celebrating diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Patricia, how do folks click on? Where do they sign up? How do they find out more?
Yeah, absolutely. ACEonline.org. So that's HACEonline.org is our website. You can also find us on our social media channels, LinkedIn, and reach us that way as well. And I hope to see next week folks that attend our National Leadership Summit, which is April 20th and 21st, a combination of professional development, workshops, networking, and celebration.
Patricia Moda's the CEO over there. Well done, Patricia. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you.